First, I think we'll hand it to Jennifer to give us some final reflections here, and then we'll open it up to questions and answers. So thank you, Carrie, Mark, and Sadie, and Jennifer.
Thanks, Mary. So on behalf of Chester and all of AmeriCorps State National, we want to appreciate all the amazing work that is being done by all of the presenters. We deeply value the relationship we have with NORC, and all of, just listening to all of the findings. I think it validates for us as funders, that if you find a great partner, and in this case, it was the Minnesota Reading Corps and the Minnesota Commission, and if you set the frame and provide the resources and get out of the way, amazing and impactful work occurs. I also think that Minnesota Reading Corps and its replication is both instructive and reassuring to everybody in the AmeriCorps portfolio, in that the thoughtful and measured steps that they took to assess their program model, before they became the juggernaut that they currently are, they didn't just jump into a randomized controlled trial. They took deliberate small steps to assess their model, and that is something that should be reassuring to all of us, regardless of where we are on the evidence continuum, and the level of resources that we have, is that they are instructive in taking biteable chunks to move ever forward with what they're doing. I also want to underline that for anyone who's listening who still feels that we are asking you to do evidence for evidence sake, you may have heard at the beginning that Audrey talked about how this process has allowed them to get $9 million in match, which is indeed not evidence for evidence sake. So just a loving sharing of that. So I am told that professional athletes psych themselves up by listening to music. I am told that because I am not athletic. But I get myself focused and amped up with quotes. And one of my favorite quotes is a Chinese proverb that says, "The journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step." I know this to be true related to my own work. When I work on writing the notice for funding opportunity, my first step is to change the date from the previous year to the current year. That is highly satisfying. I am not a researcher. I do not have fancy language. I went to business school, and the most fancy we got in business school is we learned to say finance instead of finance. That was the big fancy thing we learned in business school. So I don't have fancy language, but I think what blows my mind about this presentation is not just the incredible impact of some of the hardest to serve that this program model has done, but that the single step that the AmeriCorps members who served 1,200 hours and the single step for the K through two students that participate in the program, the single step is a 1 minute assessment that is done, that really sets the stage for the level of success and the model. And, to borrow from my stepdaughter, it helps you know where you at. Right at the beginning, with 1 minute, through just a minute, that really begins to layer on what we're able to see through this. And the good news is for AmeriCorps State and National, and the challenge for many of you is, what is the single step that you are taking, or what is the single step that you have committed to take in the applications that you submitted to us, related to this, and specifically in the education space? We're lucky that we have an incredible amount of programs that can take that first single step. More than half of our grants and program budget supports education-related programs, so people working in this space. We have more than 44,000 AmeriCorps members and nearly 45,000 Senior Corps volunteers that are supporting at-risk youth at more than 540,000 students in communities across the country. So there is incredible opportunity for people both to consider replicating this model, but also really thinking about what are the lessons they can take from the journey that the Minnesota Commission and Minnesota Reading Corps and reading in math have taken that are germane to the work that you're doing. So I really appreciate the research and evaluation department for putting this together and offering this to our field. So thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. With that, I'm going to turn this over to Andrea, who's going to facilitate some questions and answers. So Andrea.
Yeah, so this was, thank you so much. This is very exciting. Just a few things for our in-person audience. Please state your name before asking your question. For our online audience, you can ask questions by typing it in the Q&A box. And you can also ask a question using the microphone on your computer by selecting the raise hand feature from the menu above, and we will grant you microphone rights in the order questions come in. But for now, we've been getting a couple in the chat box. So here's the first one. Is the Reading Corps looking at expanding the study in other states, or had any dialogue with other professionals who can conduct that, conduct it in their state?
Reading Corps might answer that question.
Yeah, this is Sadie. I'm happy to answer that question. So Reading Corps is currently being replicated in 12 states, and Lindsay Dolce commented, I think, on that chat box, Anna, just a couple of people below you, and said we're always looking to expand our research and our scope across the country, and she shared her contact information also and could connect with you offline about that.
Okay. Here's another one. Can you please explain the calculation behind the statistic that second and third graders made 47% more growth in half a year?
Can you repeat that again?
Can you please explain the calculation behind the statistic that second and third graders made 47% more growth in half a year? I think that was your earlier.
Yeah, that was well. That was the Minnesota finding. Mark, are you able to speak a little bit about how that's translated into the 47%?
I'm unmuting myself. Yes, and so this is one instance where I wish Eric Hedberg was with us. I will channel him as best as I can. What we did is there's a paper that he loves to share with folks that very nicely lays out what the expected, it's a meta-analysis that says what the expected effect sizes in particular academic outcomes can be what the expected amount of growth is in a particular year on particular outcomes. And so we used four second and third grade students. I think if he chose third grade or if he combined the two. But we used that, and then given the amount of growth that we saw in ours, converted it into how much growth is expected in a year, given how much growth we had in ours, and the difference in growth between the two groups, what does that equal in terms of the amount of growth over the course of a year? So we could actually give you, and we'd be happy to have Eric send you exactly how we computed that, but that's where, that's in the short form where that came from. I don't care if you have any more to add to that, but.
I think that was a good explanation. So it's beyond the typical growth you would see. Okay.
So Julie Brown asked, would the Literacy Corps model translate to middle school? I'm thinking it's the Reading Corps model.
Yeah, it's the Reading Corps model. That may be a programmatic question. I don't think there's any plans right now to convert it to middle school, but maybe that would be more a question for Sadie or Audrey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the Reading Corps model currently is kindergarten through third grade, and we haven't really expanded beyond third grade. Our interventions and the design of it is really focused on that specific age group. With that said, we do also have a math core model, not focused on literacy, of course, focused on math. But it's a very similar model with intervention and assessment that is focused on the fourth through eighth grade. And we'd be happy to talk with you offline if that was something that you'd be interested in learning more about.
I will add to that is, so in terms of the interventions that would be used, that would obviously have to be tailored towards the correct age group. But I think there are a lot of lessons learned about how the program is structured, the training, the coaching that they provide, the relationships they have with the school, where the school provides an on-site coach as a partner in the process. And I think there's a lot to be learned about how they structure the program that I think can result, that I think contribute to the positive results that we see. You know, obviously you have to have the right intervention too. And so, you know, that even though Reading Core is not doing this intervention with middle schools, I think there's a lot to be learned about how you implement a program in schools that works with students one-on-one.
So these lessons learned, are they in a paper, and how can people follow up with some of the things you just said?
Well, so the 2014 study that I mentioned, so the previous study that we did for CNCF, there is an implementation. We did a process evaluation. And in the final chapter and in the executive summary, we describe the things about the program that make it a success. So obviously there's the evidence-based interventions that are important, but there's all, and Sadie mentioned there's a 3-day training with AmeriCorps members. But there are other things about it. There's a multi-tiered supervision structure that also includes regular coaching. So it's not just about training people and putting them or placing them in the program. It's also about providing regular coaching and doing regular check-ins to make sure that that the intervention is being implemented correctly and consistently. There's the partnership with the schools where they have buy-in also into the process. And there's the data-driven nature of the program. So they identify students who need the program through this fall benchmark assessment. So that's really critical. It's not just based on teacher recommendations or, you know, what kids are available, but it's based on a data point that has to be taken and determines which students are eligible. And also, in some cases, when they provide interventions, especially to the older students, they do a weekly assessment on the kids. And so sometimes that weekly assessment helps them figure out what's working and what isn't with different students. So it's very data-driven also. And of course, I have to add, they also do regular evaluations of their program, which I think is also critical. And they're, you know, I would say the program has evolved over time, and that has been, those changes to the program have all been driven by the evidence, the evaluation, the data that they've been collecting for program improvement. I don't know, Mark or Sadie or Audrey, if you'd have anything else to add.
I think that's a great answer, and I would say definitely to give a shout out. Do you know where on the all of the materials from the 2014 evaluation that were funded by CNCS are on the CNCS website, and so you can go there and there's executive summaries, full reports. It's the impact evaluations that actually includes the pre-K studies as well. You can all get that's all available right now on CNCS's website.
And that's through the evidence exchange. So here we have lots of comments coming in. So just, this is a comment, we love a longer term study. We have an RSVP tutoring program with a similar program design and see great outcomes. We'd love to know the long-term effects of our intervention. That's just a comment. So here we go. Do you consider matching students and demographics in addition to the fall benchmark scores? Can you talk through that decision?
Well, it's a randomized controlled trial. So the randomization process theoretically takes care of differences in demographics. We should theoretically, through the randomization process, end up with two groups that are similar. But I always recommend that that a baseline analysis be done to confirm that that's the case. So after we did the randomization, we then did some statistical comparisons between the groups on demographics. So we looked at gender, we looked at race, we looked at ELL, you know, percentage ELL, we looked at free and reduced price lunch, we looked at all of these different demographics between the program and the control group, and we found that the groups, it confirmed for us that the groups were similar, that the randomization process did work. However, I will add that sometimes just because things are random, sometimes randomly you can end up with some demographics that do end up being different between groups. It just happens sometimes. And if it does, you can take care of that in your statistical model, but you have to do that baseline analysis in order to identify those differences. In our case, like I said, we did the baseline analysis. It confirmed the randomization process worked. We ended up with two groups that were similar.
Great.
I might add to that a benefit of doing this. A benefit of doing this is something that can sometimes be a weakness, particularly of randomized controlled trials, or if you're familiar with the IES, Institute of Education Sciences, What Works Clearinghouse. One of the things that can knock you off of having really strong evidence is if there's unequal attrition between groups in a program, so kids dropping out or moving or what have you, and we know particularly in authentic education settings and with programs that are serving at-risk kids, that can be a real problem just in general, independent of the program. And so one of the benefits of having, what you can't do is, well, let me say this, one of the benefits of having a matched pair randomization is that we knew if a kid dropped out in one of those conditions, who their counterpart was in the other condition, and you could eliminate them from the sample and maintain equal groups and random groups. And so that was a benefit to doing a matched pair randomization. I think it was one of the main reasons we did it. Also, just to speak to the, I think you're probably in your question noting like what's more important maybe in a way, and the literature clearly shows that the most predictive variable related to later student growth is a child's own pretest score, more than demographics, any other demographic characteristic that we know. If you don't have pretest scores, then we do know that some of the other demographic variables like race, ethnicity, DLL status, et cetera, are predictive of later scores. But the most predictive thing is a pretest score. And so that's why we focused on that.
Great.
Good question.
I actually have a question. This is Mary Hyde. This is actually a question for either Audrey, Sadie, or Mark and Carrie. I'm just curious about any lessons learned you'd like to share around the process of actually replication and taking this to scale in different states and communities across the country. Clearly, you are data-driven. You're using evidence as one of your lead criteria for making the decision to replicate in other communities. But I'm just curious, maybe from a programmatic or a policy, just practical terms, what are some of the most important things you'd want to share with others who are thinking about maybe replicating either your model or some other model, to Jennifer's earlier point?
Sadie, do you want to take that?
Sure. This is Sadie again. I think the first thing that came to mind as you were asking that question, Mary, is just being really clear about what's essential to the model. So I think we were pretty clear, even in Minnesota, as we were scaling the program statewide here, and that same principle applied as we started scaling the program nationally. But what are things that are just essential to the model? So if you were to, go into a school in Minneapolis, if you were to go into a school in Bemidji, if you were to go to a school in Denver, Colorado, what things would you see consistently being applied in all of those settings? So having consistency with the interventions, consistency with the assessments, consistency with the implementation of those things, and then measures of fidelity to go with it, so we could actually have confidence that the interventions and the assessments and the model was being implemented as it was being designed. I think that's just been a really important component as, like I said, as we scaled even here in Minnesota, but even more so as we started to replicate outside of Minnesota.
Can I answer that? This is Carrie Markovitz. So I agree with Sadie about that, and I will add, you should do a thorough process evaluation in order to identify what the essential items are. So I definitely agree with that. Something that I've observed both with Reading Corps but also with other programs that I've seen either succeed or fail at scaling is that I think you always need a local champion for your program. So in Minnesota, there are key individuals who are responsible for both its success and its sustainability. And I think that Reading Core did a good job of identifying what are the important organizations or people that they need to have on board and involved in their other locations in order to be champions for this program. That, you know, you have to identify who are the key players and make sure that they're on board and they're part of that process. When I've seen scaling not work out, it's because somebody's trying to implement a program and they just, there isn't an advocate there. There isn't somebody who's spearheading it or, you know, or whoever is the big players in that area, in that location, they're not part of implementing the program. And that's just so critical, I think, to its success.
So thank you. Here's just a question, which Sadie took up, but I'd like to hear other people, especially for those of you listening. Are there any plans to share the three-day training AmeriCorps tutors receive with the foster grandparent volunteers? And I don't know if there's someone from senior.
That's an interesting thought.
Yeah. Yeah, and I commented, too, we have done some work with foster grandparents in the past, although it was in our pre-K model, so feel free. Anybody can feel free to reach out to me. I plugged in my email into the comments box if you're interested in learning more. We do replicate our program model nationally, as I said earlier. So if there is any component of this model that is really seems interesting, we're happy to have conversation and field any questions about that. Our training, I will say, is really focused on those specific interventions and on those specific assessments. So we'd be happy just to share kind of like our philosophy with how we do that training and what that kind of looks like.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. I'm waiting for some other questions that I see people are typing.
You know, I might add, while we're waiting for people to type, I mean, yeah. As an outside, you know, as an education researcher, when we first start engaged with, you know, through the CNCS project evaluation with the Reading Corps, Carrie, myself, and our team attended their training and went and as part of the process assessment observed some of the ongoing coaching and professional development that is a core component to this program. And even as someone who has a PhD in child development, it was incredibly impressive the amount of information that the program had put together in such a tight package, so that was highly aligned with, you know, the core objectives of what this program was trying to achieve. They tried to give as much information to these folks, the coaches, the on-site coaches, the external coaches, the actual AmeriCorps members themselves in a short period of time. And one of the things I'll note that often people said was, oh boy, it was really, you know, there was so much there. I learned so much, but I was worried, how am I going to do this? And the answer to it was that wasn't the end. Like, and I think Carrie noted this too, which is unique about this program, that built into this is this really, it's a wonderful model for ongoing professional development through ongoing trainings, coachings, the materials they produce. I still have a copy of the huge literacy handbook. It's like a 3-inch ring binder full of materials that they learn about and can reference later. Online resources that have videos that show you best practices so that you can refresh yourself or improve. I mean, it really is a very comprehensive set of resources that, I mean, any, not just AmeriCorps member, but I mean, I think we've also heard from, you know, teachers themselves. Who really, you know, the resources are really helpful, and so, you know, the concept of being able to take some of, or the idea of what the Reading Corps is doing and transfer it, maybe the material itself couldn't be because it's so highly aligned with what the Reading Corps is trying to do, but this structure that has been put in place of how you train folks who, for the most part, know nothing about literacy development to be able to sit down with children and produce these types of effects as quickly as they do is something that I think is a real opportunity to learn from in terms of what the Reading Corps has been able to put together.
Thank you, Mark. That's very important. One other thing that Lindsay Dolce adds is, in terms of replication, I would add that having the time to work through a planning process prior to startup is important to long-term success. So training, the planning process as well. And I just want to say it's 28 after the hour, so I just want to give all our speakers 30 seconds each to say anything that you'd like to add. Carrie, do you want to begin?
First of all, I just want to thank everyone, CNCF, Reading Corps, Reading and Math, the State Commission in Minnesota. I just want to thank everyone for giving us the opportunity to be able to study this program. And again, I would just go back to the fact that there's a lot of evidence that this program is effective and having an impact with students, and that it's both effective and highly replicable. So I'm very pleased to have been involved with this program since 2011 and watch it evolve, watch it be replicated in 12 states and Washington, D.C., I think now. I do think that there's a lot to learn from this program. It's a good model, and now there's a lot of research that I think can, you know, point to what are the effective practices, what are the key elements that make it replicable, and there's a lot to learn from that. So just thank you, everyone, for giving us this opportunity to study what I think is a very promising program.
Thank you, Carrie. Sadie or Audrey?
This is Audrey. I would just thank everybody on the webinar and CNCS, and then I would extend an invitation to anybody who's listening. If you do have additional continuous improvement ideas or research questions that you'd want to put into our R&D pipeline, by all means, send them our way. We obviously want to and need to keep learning.
Great, thank you. Mark?
I think Carrie covered everything. I'd just say that this is such a great example, like thinking about in the education space, how do you take, service, folks who want to provide a year of time to help improve the educational system and integrate them in a way that can produce really big impacts above and beyond, in collaboration with the schools in which they're working. And so this is, it's been a pleasure to be able to study this program, learn from it, and hopefully, in our presentations and our work going forward, share some of the best parts, the active ingredients of this program with others.
Okay, thank you so much. And I'm just going to turn it to Mary.
Great, and I believe we're out of time. So thank you again to all of our speakers and for those of you in the audience who joined today for this exciting discussion. I also want to thank ICF, our communications contractor, for their technical support and coordination. Thank you, Emily. We will be sending out a post-webinar survey, so please let us know your thoughts on the webinar or ideas for future webinars. And we will be posting this recording in about a month for those of you who weren't able to join live or had to hop up early. Thank you all, and have a great afternoon or evening, depending on your time zone.
Thank you.